Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
One of the fun debates among Georgia fans over the last few weeks, and it's really within the last few weeks this has gotten going, whether it be barbershop, tailgate, kind of wherever else Dog fans might happen to be, is this the best defense that Kirby Smart has had at Georgia? How does this defense compare to the one in 2017? Well, I am now of the confident opinion that this is, up to this point in time, Kirby's best defense at Georgia. Now, the rest of the season remains to be seen. There's still a lot of work for this group to do, but up until this point in time, there is something in particular I like about the Georgia defense that makes it different than the previous high water mark for UGA defense, which goes back to 2017. Let me try to explain this way. I don't care what kind of your experience with investing is, you know, making more money, being any kind of investor, low level, high level, maybe not an investor at all. There's one thing every person has heard about investing. The most simple, basic investing advice you ever heard in your life is you have got to diversify your portfolio. You've got to make sure that not all of your eggs are in one basket. Now, you should probably consult your own financial advisor if that's good news for you or good advice for you. But I think that's also kind of true sometimes when it comes to football. And I just think that when you look at the overall profile of the 2019 Georgia defense, I think it's a more diversified portfolio. It's kind of spread out all amongst the S&P 500 as opposed to just maybe one company. It's good to own Apple, but if that's all you own, you're obviously pretty vulnerable to a downturn in the market. The 2019 defense for me, for Georgia, just looks a lot more diversified than the one in 2017. Now, the numbers for both these groups kind of tell a similar story. In 2017, the defense that led Georgia to an SEC championship and ultimately an appearance in the college football playoff was sixth that year in scoring at 16.4 points per game. This year, the 2019 defense, slightly better up to this point in time, they are fourth nationally in scoring at 11.4 points per game. Let's give a little bit of an extra nod to the 2017 group, because one thing they've had to do that this Georgia team hasn't done yet is that team played Auburn twice, when Auburn was pretty good that year, played Oklahoma in a Rose Bowl, and played Alabama in the national championship, still kept the number at 16.4. So interesting there. If you care more about the advanced stats, the numbers are flip-flopped. The 2017 defense for Georgia was fourth in Football Outsiders FEI. The 2019 defense for Georgia is sixth in Football Outsiders FEI. So one way or another, the two defenses are pretty similar. They are very highly ranked in the advanced stats, very stingy when it comes to keeping teams off the scoreboard. But the 2017 defense had something that 2019 didn't have. It had Roquan Smith. And if you go back and look at the stats from the 2017 year, Roquan had nearly 150 tackles that year. Now, there are other ways to measure success other than just, you know, tackles, but just for a minute, work with me on this. He had nearly 150 tackles. He had almost twice as many tackles as the second leading tackler for Georgia that year. And it's great to have a Roquan Smith, and don't think I wouldn't want to have one on this Georgia team right now, or really any Georgia team ever. He's one of the most fun players to watch that you can ever have. But that's not exactly diversifying your portfolio when in tough games, tight situations, every fan kind of looked at the middle of the field. What's number three going to do? Well, what's Roquan Smith going to do? What magic trick is he going to pull to levitate his body over to a ball carrier, quarterback, whatever? How's he going to save us this time? With no disrespect to Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy, any of the other, you know, kind of veteran defensive players on that defense, John Atkins included, that was Roquan Smith's team, and he won the Buckus Award for it, and he had 10 tackles this past Sunday in the NFL. So Roquan's a very good football player, but a lot of the success for Georgia in 2017 was predicated on Roquan Smith. I actually really like the diversified portfolio for Georgia here in 2019, where you don't really see quite as much importance placed on any one player. You've had a good year from Azeez Ojulari. You've had a really good year from Eric Stokes. Really, if you had to say, what's the strength of the Georgia defense right now? Is it the secondary? Is the linebacking core? Is it the defensive line? I think a smart, knowing Georgia fan would have to spend some time debating that, of which group do you really like better? Now, listen, you look at a guy like Jordan Davis, he could certainly arguably be among Georgia's most important players because of the way that he clogs the middle of the defensive line. Nolan Smith may eventually become that guy. the two safeties, J.R. Reed, Richard LeCount, I believe they're bringing a lot to Georgia in terms of the leadership. But the point here is there was a debate to be had. And I think the presence of that debate and the strong case you can make for a number of Georgia's players as being the most important defensively just leaves them less vulnerable to injury, or in some cases, maybe something beyond injury that takes a player off the field. Because what leads me to think about this, comparing 2017 Georgia to 2019 Georgia, you may have seen the news here on this Friday morning that Ohio State, at least for right now, has lost its best player. Now, I guess there's a chance, and probably a pretty good one, that Chase Young eventually plays again. But Letterman Rowe, who covers Ohio State and, you know, kind of a website that kind of does that there in Columbus, says that Chase Young, facing suspension, expected to miss the Maryland game. And we'll find out what he misses beyond that. But, y'all, Chase Young's got 13.5 sacks. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. It'd be good to have a player like Chase Young who has 13.5 sacks. Gosh knows my favorite NFL team, the Atlanta Falcons. I'd love to see them get Chase Young in the NFL draft. But there's something to be said when so many of your eggs are in the basket of one player, that when that player is taken off the field, unlikely to be an NCAA issue, but certainly more likely to be an injury because injuries are part of the game. How well do you respond to when your best player is taken off the field? I'm honestly curious to see how Ohio State responds without Chase Young. Do I expect them to lose to Maryland? No, I don't. Maryland's not good enough to win that game. Do I expect the Ohio State defense to be less than without Chase Young? Yeah, I kind of do. And while certainly no Georgia player would wish any kind of injury situation on any of the current Georgia guys, I think Georgia is sort of less vulnerable to a key injury in 2019 than it would have been in 2017. If Roquan had gotten hurt 2 years ago, those happy memories you have of Pasadena in the Rose Bowl, they never would have happened. That SEC championship trophy that Georgia held up after the game against Auburn, with all due respect, I don't believe that would have ever happened. Georgia had put a lot of its eggs in the Roquan Smith basket in 2017. That was a good thing to do because Roquan was a very good player. But it's probably a better scenario overall to be where Georgia is this year. Not as heavily reliant on any one player to get it done. And when you're only averaging 11.4 points per game and you're sixth in the nation, according to Football Outsiders FEI and defensive efficiency, knowing you've done that with an ensemble cast of players, I think overall that's pretty good. And for what it's worth, Kirby Smart did talk about that this week. The idea that Georgia, being as good as it's been, hasn't given up a rushing touchdown yet, for the most part, completely convinced Dan Mullen not to even try to run the ball really at all on Saturday. Kirby Smart says it does take all 11 guys to get that done. Here's Kirby from this week.
It's everybody. In today's world, every play has three plays. So they can throw it to him, they can toss it to him, or he can keep it. You're at the point of attack at all 11 positions. So if you play good run defense, it's not that guy or that guy. I mean, it's every guy, because football has just evolved to the point where that guy's cracking that guy. So the guy over there has got to go make the play. You're all tied into a string.
So listen, this is one of those debates that's going to continue, and obviously there are things with the 2017 defense that I think that you like. But when you think about Georgia's championship push for the rest of the year, I think Georgia fans ought to have a growing sense of confidence that that push is propelled by a defense that's not led by any one superstar. It is more of an ensemble cast, more of a group of guys working together. All 11 that are on the field at any one time have proven their value, and Kirby Smart says the way in which those guys work together is going to determine a lot about how successful this group and the team overall is before the season is done. Hello, Dog Nation. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Kroger, and it's great to have you with us no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Let me give you a quick word about my friends at Kroger here as well. Big doings for them tomorrow. How about an open house at your local Kroger store? It's from noon to 5 p.m. all around the city. It's a great chance for you to sample some seasonal favorites. We're coming up on that holiday time of year, and obviously when you think holidays, you think our friends at Kroger. It is fresh for everyone, including the holiday season. And while you're there for the open house this weekend or tomorrow, you can plan all your holiday events. Deli, bakery, produce favorites, shop hundreds of gift cards. A lot of you have hard to buy for folks in your life, friends, family, everything else. Gift cards are always a great choice, and Kroger's got the best selection. And of course, you can pick up some holiday favorites like wreaths, centerpieces, fun holiday decor, all the decorations you need to get ready for the holiday season, and those parties and big meals you got to plan. You can do that at Kroger tomorrow. It's an open house from noon to 5 p.m. at a Kroger near you, so look forward to seeing you there for that. Also, while I've got your attention, let me give you something else to put on the calendar. next Thursday, we're going to be live at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven for our Marlowe's matchup. John Stinchcomb, myself, talking some Georgia football with you. It'll be the Brookhaven location, 3575 Durden Drive Northeast. That's 3575 Durden Drive Northeast. From 6 to 8 p.m., we'll do a live broadcast. We'll do a kind of a candid, off-the-record Q&A where John will really give you his unfettered thoughts about how things are going with Georgia. It'll be fun. There'll be recruiting stuff mixed into this. A lot of talk about how Georgia compares to the playoff contenders, and of course a look ahead to next Saturday's game with Auburn. That's Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. That's November 14th, Thursday of next week, at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven, 3575 Durden Drive. We're gonna get Jeff Sintel here coming up in a moment. Speaking of recruiting, there is a lot to talk to Jeff Sintel about today, and we're gonna do a lot of that here coming up, including, I hope you read his piece with Noah Sewell, because when it comes to five-star linebacker, there was something I think pretty interesting kind of buried into that that I think is worth us talking about here right now, something I think is actually really good news for Dog fans who want to hear some good news when it comes to Sewell. So we'll do that coming up with Jeff Sintel in just a moment. Now, let me go around the doghouse. Brought to you today by our friends at Merriweather and Tharp. And I just spent a bunch of time telling you that, hey, the Georgia defense is the best that Kirby Smart has had because there's no Chase Young on this defense. Not that you wouldn't want Chase Young. There's no Roquan Smith on this defense. Not that you wouldn't want Roquan Smith. This is a defense not led by any one superstar. This is a defense that kind of spreads the wealth, and all 11 guys are working together pretty well in concert with each other. Now, what I'm about to tell you is the Georgia offense right now, I believe, is almost the exact opposite of that. And I do believe that's okay. I do believe it's okay that for the remainder of this season, the Georgia offense is seemingly going to be a little more, I'm going to use air quotes around this, superstar driven. That Georgia's going to lean pretty heavily on a couple of names here the rest of the way. Not doing that defensively, you've pretty much got, you know, it's more than 11, but it's only 11 on the field at any one time. You've pretty much got all 11 guys contributing. I don't want to say all of them are contributing equally, but it's sort of hard to decide who's your number one most significant contributor defensively. Offensively, it is not that way, and I think that is okay. Look at the running back situation for a moment. How many carries did DeAndre Swift get this past weekend? 20-plus for Swift, I believe, against the Gators on Saturday. That's a little bit more of an uneven dispersion than we're used to seeing. We're used to seeing Kirby give, you know, the ball to a couple different backs almost easily, almost evenly, and then in some cases getting about three guys or so involved. But right now, it's going to be Kirby Smart leaning pretty heavily on what it seems like DeAndre Swift, with maybe Brian Herrien, you know, kind of behind in the second place of that pecking order, but still pretty clearly leaning on Swift a lot. And Kirby, when he talked about that this week, because let's face it, for a lot of fans, they'd like to see Zamir White more involved than he has been. They'd like to see James Cook more involved than he has been. But Kirby, in terms of the way that he's dispersing carries right now, he really made no apologies for that this week. And I think this is very interesting. Here's Kirby again.
I think we've done a good job. I mean, we got a good stable back. It's a hard management. Do you not give the ball to seven? I want seven with the ball as much as possible. I want 35 with the ball, but James Cook does a good job. Zamir's had flashes and done good things. So, I mean, it's not easy to assess how it's been done. What you can say is we want the best players and the best opportunity to win. And I think each one of those guys realize that and acknowledge it. And they all have different strengths, and we try to use those strengths.
So, listen, I think you don't get much more succinct than that, Kirby saying, I want the ball in seven's hands as much as I can. And obviously 35 after that, meaning Brian Harry. No disrespect to Zamir White. No disrespect to James Cook. I believe their moment in a Georgia uniform is going to come. But this is a Georgia offense right now that, let's just be candid and honest here for a moment, it's not quite as effective as the defense has been. It's great to defensively be able to have 11 guys kind of all working as one and be as statistically dominant as it's been. The Georgia offense has scuffled a little bit more than that. So the way that you raise that level over the course of the rest of the season, Kirby Smart says, I'm going to look at my guys who are the closest to being superstar players. I'm going to say, ball in your hand as much as possible. And that means seven at the running back position. And who wouldn't be okay with that when you see what the results were for Saturday? Not a statistically dominant performance, but the kind of thing where Georgia was able to keep the football, keep the Florida offense off the field, and kind of move on down the line and set itself up for great success on third down. So Kirby going to treat the offense a little different than the defense right now. They are going to lean more on one guy over the other, and I think that's kind of okay. I think it's the same thing with the wide receiver core there as well. A lot of guys had catches on Saturday, but obviously no one was more effective and no one was used more prolifically than Lawrence Cager was. Now on this particular point, Kirby Smart says, You know, listen, Jake Fromm's got comfort with all of his receivers, and he could go to any other at any given time. Yet with our own eyes, we see Cager kind of being the lead dog in that pack right now. And once again, I'm kind of okay with that. But here's what Kirby Smart said about that this week.
Yeah, I'd say he's comfortable with him. He's comfortable with some of our other wideouts. I mean, some of those plays Cager got were just – they weren't featured Cager plays. He was the second, third, fourth option on some of them. Some of them he may be primary. Some of them he's primary based on coverage. Some of them he's not. But some of them Jake had time to work to him to make the decision on who to throw it to. So I don't think it was a scheme deal. It was, some of them he was just the best option. He was the open option in the zone. But Jake's comfortable with all our guys. I think he's got a good rapport with all the receivers.
So listen, let me see if I can sum this up very simply this way. If you could have any scenario you wanted, I think you'd want the scenario with the Georgia defense. 11 guys kind of all working somewhat evenly in terms of their importance overall. That'd be your best case scenario. But barring that, you just do whatever you got to do to get the job done. And giving the ball a bunch to 7 and a bunch to 15 right now is the way the Georgia offense is going to choose to get the job done. And who am I to argue with the results based on what happened on Saturday? It's Around the Doghouse. It's brought to you by our friends at Merriweather and Tharp. And of course, the divorce process can be scary and confusing. I know you get a lot of questions because you've never been through this before. Well, the good news is my friends at Merriweather and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce, they've been through this thousands of times. And that institutional knowledge they've cultivated through that process is now for you to use at your disposal. They can make you feel whole again. Your family can feel normal again. Things can be put back together. But the best advice I can give you is to have an advocate on your side. The website to go to is theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's the Atlanta Divorce Team. And that'll get you in touch with my friends at Merriweather and Tharp. It's good to have you with us here today. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We get a lot more on Georgia, Missouri before we're done. For now, though, let's talk some UGA recruiting with our buddy Jeff Centel. And we'll get... Okay, let's...
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And Jeff Centel, a lot to talk to with him here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger here today. A lot of good stuff that Jeff's had on the site here over the last couple of days. I want to make sure we kind of get into and discuss here a little bit. Jeff, welcome to the program. Happy Friday to you. Hope you're doing well, and glad to have you with us.
Hey, guys. Happy Dog Nation Daily Friday. And I tell you, all those dog fans that are like me, I'm looking at my media credentials, and I only have one more left at Sanford Stadium after this weekend. So that means one more ticket in the ticket drawer, the ticket envelope for everybody else. And this season has flown by.
Yeah, for the people who don't know, the way they give out media credentials is pretty similar to all of you who have the season tickets. I guess the parking is a little bit more like the season tickets, where you get that big card and you kind of tear them off as the season goes. And I'm very much like you. I used to do this with my old season tickets back in the day. I do this with my credentials and parking now, where it's like over the course of the year, and you always have this special drawer that you keep them in. Over the course of the year, those tickets start to dwindle down. The credentials start to dwindle down. The parking passes start to dwindle down. You really do mark time that way, Jeff. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I've thought about that myself many times.
And you know, it's funny, Brandon, like it just happens every year. And like I don't want to say like you and I ever get jaded, or the normal Georgia fan that's there at 7 o'clock in the morning with their tailgate and their chili going or whatever. But think about this. So there's 93,000 people inside Sanford Stadium. I would say, and this is just my, you know, amateur's guess here, there's probably 3,000 people in that stadium, maybe even 10,000, that are seeing Sanford Stadium for the first time. I've had a bunch of people reach out to me this week about, hey, this is my first time going to see Georgia. It's going to be late. What do I need to do? And you know, they got young kids, and they've moved and they've transplanted into Atlanta, and they're going to go check out the dogs. And that's something to think about. For a lot of people, you know, this is just another string in another year. They've never missed every game, and they go by every program every week. But, like, for others, that's their first time in Sanford Stadium, and you imagine that. They're going to see the lights. They're going to see the light show. They're going to see James Cook run for 150 yards on 24 carries. They're going to see all that.
From your lips to God's ears, Jeff, maybe that'll indeed be the case. Hey, let's talk some recruiting here for a moment. I thought you had some good stuff on the site this week. Let me start with Noah Sewell, and I found that article to be very interesting, and I hope people kind of notice from that what I have noticed. First of all, it sounds like he's very content to focus right now on trying to win a state championship there in the Beehive State, and I think he deserves every chance to go out there and do that. We'll respect that. But, Jeff, if we can, you know, typically talk about the follow the visits mantra when it comes to recruiting, I think the follow the lack of visits is also maybe worth paying attention to from time to time. And the fact that Sewell's been to Oregon, and we obviously respect that, given the fact that his brother is a very good player there. Sewell's been to Georgia, and by all accounts, that went really, really well. But the fact that, according to what Gabriel Sewell, Noah's dad told you this week, the fact that he's kind of unsure about when he'll take other official visits or if he even will take those other official visits, if you're a Georgia fan, I think that ought to be eye-opening news. Now, it's never over until it's over in recruiting, and obviously I know that family's been through this process with other siblings before, and so they'll be deliberate in how they go about it. But, Jeff, I took the Sewell piece at DogNation.com this week to be pretty good news for Georgia fans on the basis of the continued absence of other plans to visit other schools, Texas A&M in particular.
Yeah, so sometimes, Brandon, when I write something about this, I try to sit there and I'm going to go, okay, I've worked with you so long, I'm going to go, what is Brandon really going to get out of this? Where do I need to leave the cookie crumbs there for Brandon Adams to, like, munch on with his morning coffee or whatever? And with the Noah Sewell story, I think it's great that he's focusing just on his playoff situation. He's locked in on his high school program, which it is, that is as it should be. But here's the delicious part about that if you're an Oregon fan or you're a Georgia fan. So he visited Georgia on September the 21st, and then he visited Oregon roughly on October the 26th. So in between that was the meat of the high school regular season, not the playoffs, where he could have went and seen any of these schools, or he could have checked out a lot more schools. That's intriguing if you follow all this, because it definitely seems that there's what I view to be the comfortable and the known, which would be Oregon. And then there would be maybe the unique, the exotic, and the undiscovered country. That would be Georgia.
Yeah.
And that part at the end, I wanted to give everybody like a little tasty toasty creme brulee at the end, where his father shared with me. I asked him simply to break down, you know, the strength of the pull from Oregon and the strength of the pull from Georgia. And he brought up the Southeastern Conference, yeah, and he brought up the megawatt status, as Georgia is the league and it is the conference and it is the biggest stage. And I know that family a little bit, and I know Noah Sewell a little bit. And for him, he's the type of guy that's going to try and find out the biggest challenge are the biggest guys on the block, and he wants to test his football skills and acumen against that type of stuff. So, you know, it was always with the SEC, was it just Georgia? Was he going to check out Texas A&M? So, you know, I consider Noah Sewell to be an alpha, and I think he looks for alpha challenges. So if you're going to be wearing red and black on Saturday, I think the fact that Georgia sits in the Southeastern Conference, like his father said, is a really, really big pull for the Bulldogs in this recruitment.
Yeah, that's the other thing about the interview I wanted to bring up. It's the way that Mr. Sewell said it. He said the conference, and there was, you know, obviously air quotes around the, or in, I guess if you're in their print, they're not air quotes, but you know, quotes around the, you know, the conference. There is clearly a belief amongst this family that the SEC does provide something pretty special, and that's kind of the other thing I think if you're a Georgia fan, you take from that article of, you know, I don't want to read too much into the Sewell family's words, because I think they have a right to be private right now. That's what they want to do, and I guess be a little bit more deliberate about their process, which is fine there as well. But admittedly, as someone who is partisan and wants to see Sewell end up at Georgia, there were some potential tells in that piece, and the glowing ways in which they speak of the SEC was certainly pretty telling, especially given the fact that one of the chief arguments in favor of the Pac-12 having a lot of talent is Noah Sewell's brother. You know, one of the big arguments you can make for why the Pac-12 is kind of worthy of potential college football playoff consideration this year is because of what Penei Sewell's doing there as a part of the Ducks offensive line. So they're actually contributing to the talent of another league and still vouching for what makes the SEC so special. Hard not to call that noticeable, and the kind of thing that certainly makes you, if you're, you know, drinking a little coffee in the morning while you read it, go, that's pretty interesting. That's worth making a note of. That's worth filing away.
So Brandon, can I add one more thing to this discussion? And hopefully I'm not going to try to put too much salt in the pound cake with this one, especially for you. But so he goes, let's look at the compare contrast thing, because that's really all you can do here. So he goes and visits Oregon, and that game was 37-35. Oregon pulls it out against Washington State.
Yeah.
That's typical Pac-10 football, balls in the air, lots of points. somebody finally comes up with stops at the end. And, you know, if you were an offensive player, then that result and that score fest would seem pretty good. But if you're a defensive player, the contrast here is Georgia's 23-17 game against Notre Dame, where it was a lot of physical football. It was a lot of contested end zones. Points were sparse. Remember, Notre Dame got 7 of their 17 points basically off an 8-yard drive off a special teams gaff. So if you're thinking about a defensive player, I'm just going to let everybody kind of do their choose-your-own-adventure right there. If you're thinking about that, if you're a defensive player, which type of ball game, which type of national exposure game would appeal to you more? Would it be the 37-35 out of the Pac-10, or would it be the 23-17 out of the SEC versus a top 10 opponent?
No, I think that's a really good point, too. Let me talk about another guy that you've written about this week, and I really enjoyed the look at Zykevious Walker, not just who he is, but kind of where he has come from. I think it's really, really interesting. And I'll add something else to the take on Walker here. He is now my favorite recruit, at least for the moment. I think for a lot of other people, he will be as well, for a very simple reason. Jeff, you know this because you're always in the forum at forum.dognation.com, and people are reaching out to you on Twitter at Jeff Sintel. There has been a very restless feel among Georgia fans, just dying for any recruiting news whatsoever. I say this all the time, that the appetite for information never goes down, but sometimes around UGA, the availability of information goes down, and when there's a gap between the appetite and the availability, there's always going to be a little bit of restlessness among the fans. People have just been wanting, now with all due respect to Jared Wilson from the 2021 class, people have just been wanting some 2020 news. Well, now we have some very specific, tangible news. Thanksgiving week, Zykevious Walker is going to announce his commitment after visiting Georgia with the Texas A&M game. It does not get any more cut and dry than that. A player that a lot of Georgia fans think they're in pretty good shape for, a player they think is a pretty good addition to this defensive line for the class of 2020. He's going to visit next Saturday, and he's going to commit like a couple of weeks after that. It is finally some real, tangible, you know, circle a week on the calendar type news. And when it comes to the 2020 class, who a lot of fans always wondered who's next to commit to the G, well, it might be Zykevious Walker. And at least for now, the fact that you can actually put a date on the board, I think for a lot of Georgia fans, they feel pretty good about that.
So Brandon, I got two things on this. One of them is a really cool story, at least I thought it was, that didn't appear in the copy on dognation.com. I kind of parked it for your program here. The second one is I got to ask, this is the question on all of Dog Nation Daily's programming fodder viewer mind. Have you already cleared it with Mrs. Adams if Zykevious Walker potentially commits to Georgia on Thanksgiving Day? Are you going to go live for about 9 to 12 minutes to talk about Zykevious Walker in between your turkey and dressing and in between your pecan pie and in between your cranberries?
So, you know, listen, we do what's required around here, but obviously – obviously, that won't be greeted the most warmly. The sort of Thanksgiving spirit that the pilgrims were welcomed to the new land with, I'm not quite so sure I'll get that same warm welcome from Mrs. Adams if Mrs. Dog Nation Daily, if I'm hopping on the old video channels on Thanksgiving night. But, you know, listen, you never know. Obviously, we're open to making folks happy here. We aim to please. We aim to deliver. So if people are interested in hearing from Dog Nation Daily, then maybe Dog Nation Daily pops on there for a couple of minutes. But my preference to sort of keep the peace on the sacred holiday that is Thanksgiving, my preference would be for more of a Black Friday type announcement. By the way, I think you could do kind of a cool Black Friday themed commitment video. And maybe it's not too late to kind of pitch this as an idea. Sort of like the doorbuster thing where everybody's kind of lined up outside the big box retailer, kind of banging on it to open up. And then when it's time to, Zykevious Walker throws up the doors and everybody kind of rushes in to celebrate his commitment. I feel like there could be something there for that, Jeff. Let's see if we can get Zykevious on the horn here and see if we can get him to buy into a concept like that.
You have them all knocking on the door in different colored sweatshirts.
Sure.
Schools, if it's four finalists, and the door's open, and, you know, they're already all gone, and he's wearing – you know, I know somebody that does a video or two, Brandon. Let me see if I can talk to him about that.
Not a bad idea. Hey, one more thing on Walker I wanted to ask you. Give me a player comparison for him. For some reason, Malik Herring comes to mind, at least based on Walker's profile coming out of high school here. The fact that he can play some three, can play some five. Is that the best comparison for the current Georgia roster when it comes to Zykevious Walker?
Yeah, I think so. I think Malik's good. I don't know if Zykevious is a little bigger.
Okay.
Maybe Malik's a little more athletic, hence the backflips at this point in their high school career. Ray Drew comes to mind, Brandon. Okay. That may be dated for a lot of folks out there, but Ray Drew was a guy that kind of immediately came to mind. The difference there with Zacchaeus is he is just so much bigger. I mean, he was at 270 at one point this year, this summer. Now he's playing at about 265. One thing I wanted to remind folks, now, on our little subject of a second ago, it would truly be the first lady of Dog Nation Daily if you go to her and you say, honey, somebody just committed, and she goes, well, is it a five-star, Brandon, or is it a four-star? I need to know this information because the arms will be folded and you won't get the eyebrows so much if it's a five-star.
Yeah, if this is one of those typical Dan Mullen Florida recruits, I'm not quite so sure I get permission to skip out on pumpkin pie for that. If this is just, you know, kind of a scraping the bottom of the barrel type three-star situation, I'm not quite so sure I get that permission. But for a big-time defensive lineman, big, highly rated four-star guy, you know, you might get a little bit more leniency to kind of push away from the cranberry sauce, at least for a moment.
So the Zacchaeus Walker story, good point. Zacchaeus Walker story. So get this, Kirby was coming to visit in the helicopter during Georgia's off week. He saw Carson Beck for a half in Jacksonville, and then he came to visit Zacchaeus Walker. Now, I wrote in that story how there's 5,300 people approximately in Schley County. That's the eighth smallest county in Georgia. But when you drop it down to Ellaville, Ellaville only has about 1,800 folks right now, or 1,900 folks. And Zacchaeus Walker has almost as many Twitter followers as the amount of people that live in his hometown, and it's not a lot. He only has like 2,000, 1,900 Twitter followers, I think, last time I checked. So one of the questions I had, because I always loved his story because it's such a unique story for a guy that writes about these players all the time. I, coming from a very small town, I think we had 135 people in my graduating class.
Yeah.
Zacchaeus only has 82, but we batted it around, and he kind of feels that Kirby Smart might be the most famous person to ever visit Schley County.
How about that?
Ellaville.
Well, that's until you do your in-home visit, though, right? I mean, that's only up until you've made your in-home visit to the Walker family.
Or the Dog Nation Invasion Tour stop when Brandon Adams shows up with Eddie the Blind Squirrel.
Honestly, don't think I would love to do that.
So get this. They're playing a football game, and all of a sudden the chopper goes over the field house, and they're in the locker room at halftime. And the chopper goes on, it goes down, it lands on one of the football fields. Kirby Smart comes out, and folks, listen, if you're listening to this program, you get what I'm about to say. This is Georgia football. This is the Deep South. Even though Zacchaeus is only about 20 minutes away from Montezuma, home of Roquan Smith, this is small town, you know, Deep South, down South Georgia boy football. And for Kirby Smart to land and show up at the high school football game, I mean, it literally might have been, you know, George Clooney or Elvis or maybe even your favorite president showing up, because immediately – everybody wants pictures with Kirby. They want to get, you know, anything with Kirby, shake his hand, see Kirby Smart or whatsoever. Meanwhile, Schley County's playing a football game, and they won that game handily. But the spectacle of that, showing up in a town that there's only like 30 people per square mile. I looked up all the census data about this. Folks, it is highly unique for what Zacchaeus Walker is doing coming out of Ellaville in Schley County, Georgia. And I had a little line in that story as well. If you listen to him talk, if you listen to him speak, I mean, gosh, if you close your eyes, I'd say about that's a 35% voice match to what those old tapes with Bill Hartman and Herschel Walker sounded like coming out of Johnson County, Riceville, Georgia in 1979.
Yeah, it's a really good story. I'll invite folks to check that out at dognation.com. I've got more for the Jeff Sintel coming up here in just a moment. Before that, though, let me tell you about my friends at the Atlanta and North Georgia Building Trades Council. Now, if you do any of this kind of work for a living, construction-type work, this is an organization you need to know about because they're dedicated to the work and the economic stability of organized construction workers in North America, creating more work opportunities, living wages, protecting your benefits. Also, an earn while you learn, no tuition apprentice training. You can earn as much as $100,000 while you're serving your apprenticeship. They also offer employer paid pension and insurance and wages up to 30% higher than non-union workers. And the great news is this isn't just for men. Women encouraged to apply as well. So you see on the screen a couple ways to get involved. GeorgiaConstructionCareers.com, the website once again for our radio and podcast audience, GeorgiaConstructionCareers.com. Or you can give them a call, 404-584-0005. 404-584-0005. Jeff, Georgia got a commitment this week. 2021 offensive lineman, Jared Wilson. A lot to like about him. I love your description of his footwork. Sounds like he's a pretty good athlete to be as big as he is. But it also gets me thinking beyond that of just how big a story offensive line is going to be for the class of 2021. Wilson here, one of those interior offensive linemen, a couple really good tackles out there, at least potentially for the Dogs. It seems like when we turn our attention fully to 2021, we're going to be talking about offensive linemen a lot, are we not?
Well, you're going to talk about it a lot basically with every Georgia class. With Sam Pittman, they're going to get about four or five, especially with the way that Georgia's kind of shipping or at least expediting or fast-lading a lot of their best prospects off to the NFL in 3 or 4 years. But with that class, you look at – there's two tackles. There's Micah Morris out of Camden County. There's Amarius Mims out of Blakely County in Cochran, Georgia. There's also Terrence Ferguson in Peach County. He's kind of like a hybrid tackle guard, which is what Georgia will probably want. They'll try to get one pure tackle, one hybrid, one guard tackle hybrid shaded towards the guard, and then another center guard type, which is what I think Jared Wilson is. And there's another name out there, a young man out of Texas by the name of Donovan Jackson, who basically shut down the opening as a junior. And even big man Mr. Ratledge, he fared better in him in the opening evaluations. He was the most valuable offensive lineman out in Frisco, Texas, back in July. He's another name that Georgia would like to snag for 2021. But, you know, offensive linemen, that's just the lifeblood of the Georgia program. Everything they do, from the physicality, to own the line of scrimmage, to chop teams down, wear teams down, the physics of big physical athletic men just finally wearing down SEC teams, all that starts in the Georgia program with those offensive linemen.
All right, Jeff, I am coming up on kind of a long time having you on the phone here, so I want to be respectful of your time. Can we try to do this? There are like two more issues I want to address with you, and it's all related to things you've written this week at DogNation.com. Can we try to do this in kind of a rapid-fire style format, if you don't mind?
I'll be on the shot clock, sir. Let's go.
All right, so let me start with this. Really good look from you about who could be on the verge of redshirting and who's kind of already blown past the redshirt. Julian Rochester played last Saturday against Florida, but he's been kind of battling an injury and trying to work his way back into the competition here. Do you think there's a chance that Georgia redshirts Rochester and looks to keep him again as a part of the 2020 team?
I think that would be – I would probably go the odds or a long shot on that, simply because Georgia defensive linemen, if they play big ball games, especially Texas A&M, Auburn, Georgia Tech, and then an LSU or an Alabama in the conference title game, I think Julian's going to be needed for a lot of that upfront depth. And he's only played in two games now, so you got to say Georgia, you know, they have a minimum of Missouri, Auburn, Texas A&M, Tech, and the SEC championship game and a bowl game. So Georgia has at least five or six games left. I think it's a safe bet that Julian plays in two or three of those.
From the same story, Natori Johnson may have played a little bit more this year than some people might realize. He could still be, I guess, a redshirt candidate here. Do you think he's maybe more in the future plans for Georgia defensive line than maybe people like me kind of assumed? I always think it's hard to go offensive line to defensive line. Natori seems to be in pretty good shape right now. Is there a chance he may actually find a home there on that defensive line for UGA?
Yeah, there's a chance. It just all depends on whether Natori wants to continue to where his role is, his path on his degree, what his academics look like. Because, you know, the thing with Natori is Natori's now moved himself into a candidate where he can be that Kay Crowder, that Michael Barnett, that Justin Young, that type player that shows up, that finally shows up for Georgia in their senior year, like a lot of those fifth-year seniors. Natori already took his red shirt. He took that in 2017 when he was kind of got that late start on his season due to some health concerns and then getting enrolled in school at the same time. So his red shirt's already taken, but it just comes down to Brandon. If Natori is a 22-year-old fifth-year senior or 23-year-old fifth-year senior in the 2020 or 2021 season, well, are you going to play him or are you going to play this 19-year-old kid that maybe just got out of high school? It's all about a physical, mature body, about – you know, it's just in any sort of physical contest, the 22-year-old man, young man, is going to come out on top most times, unless you're Trayvon Walker on the other side, and the 19-year-old and the 18-year-old freshman. I think that's a good piece for Georgia to have, especially if Natori you know, remains a part of this team and keeps moving forward academically.
And then the last thing, at least on this subject, someone that's probably played a little bit less this year than you might realize unless you were looking closely at the participation reports and your freshman reports, that's Ryan Trouble Davis. Now, I know he was injured at the end of his high school career, and I'm sure he's still recovering from that. But any kind of update you can provide for us on Davis, because when healthy, he was a pretty impressive player in high school. What's his status right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it goes Monty Rice, Tay Crowder, Tay Crowder, Bonnie Rice, and then it's Quay Walker and N'Kobe Dean, or N'Kobe Dean and Quay Walker. And then you've got Channing Kendall, who's now hurt a little bit. I think it's just a pecking order at inside linebacker. Don't forget Nate McBride, who was once a top five linebacker in the country when he signed with Georgia in 2017, who's got some second team looks late in Georgia games when that contest has been decided with the number two D. I think with Ryan, it's just a part of him being young. Remember, he was coming off a knee injury in his own right, Brandon, as well. And that's just a lot of depth Georgia has there at inside linebacker. I think he's played in one game so far. And that's the thing. He looks like he's clearly going to grab his red shirt this year.
And then very last thing for you, you also wrote about some of the 2020 commits and who could be enrolling early, and couldn't help but notice that Tate Ratledge, Broderick Jones right now are not expected to be early enrollees. Georgia could have a very intense competition for starting tackles next year, at least one, potentially both of them. We saw Andrew Thomas step in as a summer enrollee and become a starter in 2017. How is the path that Thomas traveled back then similar to what Ratledge or Jones might do for Georgia in 2020?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to just be frank with that. I have so much respect for the Pace Academy football staff, the coaches there, especially the work done by line coach Kevin Johnson. I think he's good enough to be coaching, or at least being an assistant offensive line coach in major college football somewhere right now. I think right there, Andrew and Jamari just got so much next-level elite training as an offensive lineman. Nothing to disparage the coaching that happens for Broderick Jones at Lithonia, and then also the coaching that Tate Ratledge gets at a strong Darlington program, who's still undefeated on the year. Nothing against those gentlemen there, but you know, and what the tutelage they're receiving. But I think that the big benefit when Andrew came in June was, number one, and number two, he was an athletic marvel. He was very smart. He had those long arms where he could scratch his kneecaps. But I'm not saying it's without the realm of possibility, because you look at a guy like Xavier Truss. He was another guy that showed up really late. He even came out of Rhode Island high school football, where we know that's not the same measuring stick as the Georgia high school football. And he made the travel roster already. I think both of them are going to have some unique skill sets at the tackle spot, and going to draw them a pretty long look, especially if a guy like Cade Mays moves from guard to take over one of those tackle spots vacated by Isaiah Wilson going pro and Andrew Thomas going pro and Marcus Hayes running out of eligibility.
Hey, Jeff, really good stuff. Thanks for kind of spending a couple extra minutes with us, because you had a lot of good stuff at DogNation.com this week. I want to make sure we kind of touched on all of that. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Athens tomorrow, one of the final times of the 2019 season. Let's make the most of it. Night game, pretty cool atmosphere. Bundle up, maybe a little bit cold, but it'll be great to see you. That's, of course, part of our Pella Window postgame show at the conclusion of the game there as well. So, Jeff, rest up, be ready for tomorrow, and we'll talk to you then.
Hey, happy Friday, everybody. I'll have my thermals on, no doubt about that, on the sidelines.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff from Jeff Sintel. Man, a lot of stuff from him on the site this week, DogNation.com. Hope you'll check that out. And, of course, we appreciate his time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. As we get ready to take a cruise around the SEC, brought to you by our friends at Royal Caribbean as part of our SEC Through, let me remind you of a couple things. I know I mentioned this to you yesterday. When you think about great cruise vacations, sometimes those can feel not just a long way away, but sometimes geographically kind of a long way away. Well, the good news is it doesn't have to be that way. I've been on Royal Caribbean cruise vacations, and it's very easy to get to. You know, I sail out of Port Canaveral, which is very, very close to Orlando. Easy to drive to, and unbelievable ships sailing out of Port Canaveral all the time. Whether it be the beautiful new Harmony of the Seas, the Amplified Mariner of the Seas, these are gorgeous, gorgeous cruise ships. And an unbelievable cruise vacation awaits you when you choose one of these ships. Now, there are other, you know, great ports you can go out of there as well. But for me, the most convenient is kind of get out of Port Canaveral, because it's just an easy drive and you relax. You get ready to be on the ship. And, of course, it's even better now because of the innovation and the introduction of Perfect Day CocoCay, that private destination in the Bahamas that's an exclusive part of a Royal Caribbean cruise, my advice to you would be don't hesitate to plan your vacation. Go to RoyalCaribbean.com. Now, I like to just sort of waste time kind of looking at all the stuff there online, kind of dreaming about the next cruise vacation I want to take. You can do that, but you can also kind of get a little bit more serious and go ahead and kind of plan your next trip. RoyalCaribbean.com, get you in touch with a travel advisor that can help you kind of get the best possible deal for the best possible sailing on your way for a Royal Caribbean cruise. They turned 50 years bold this year, and a great way to celebrate there with them. All right, let's talk SEC through here. Cruise around the SEC with Royal Caribbean. Let me do a couple of things here first. Let me start LSU-Alabama here for a moment. And as we head towards the weekend, you know, you see national media people saying LSU just doesn't have a chance in this game. Doesn't have a chance in this game. I think the one big takeaway I have had over the last few days, kind of looking at all of this, is maybe how underrated Ed Orgeron is as a game coach right now. The truth is, if you look at his overall record against the point spread as an SEC play, he's done a lot better than you might think. This is not some guy that doesn't do anything more than just go like this. This is a guy that's actually a better coach, you give him credit for. He's no cartoon character. I think on Saturday, he probably proves that. Conversely, we give Saban credit as being the greatest coach of all time, and certainly by merit and record, he has been. But when it comes to the games where coaching matters the most, when he's less than a touchdown favorite, and games when he's been favored by less than 7 points, against the spread, he's just 0-3-1 in his Alabama career here. Also, another number to be mindful of in this game. When the number one team in the AP poll, and that's what LSU still is, not number one in the playoff ranking, but number one in the AP poll, when they've been an underdog before, previously, it's happened 5 times in the last 40 years. The number one team in the AP poll, even as an underdog, has won in all 5 of those instances. Something to keep in mind. Something else with the LSU-Alabama game that I think is going to be crucial on Saturday. Look at the last 5 games that Alabama has lost. 44-16 to Clemson last year. 26-14 to Auburn in 2017. 35-31 to Clemson in the 2016 National Championship game. 43-37 to Ole Miss in the 2015 regular season. Then the 42-35 playoff loss to Ohio State back in 2014. With the exception of Auburn in 2017, all of those losses were high-scoring games. The winning team that beat Alabama getting into the high 30s, getting into the 40s. That's what LSU's good at. They've been good at that all season long. I think that offense travels to Tuscaloosa on Saturday. I really like LSU in this game. I think they've been underrated this week, despite the fact they've got the best resume in the sport for this season. So give me LSU in this spot on Saturday. I also think Florida struggles this weekend there as well. 26.5-point favorite against Vanderbilt. Believe it or not, this is the first time that Dan Mullen has been a 20-plus-point favorite at Florida against an FBS foe. Connor Riley had a great note. You'll see this later on as part of our R.S. Andrews Go with the Flow. In previous spots for Florida after losing to Georgia, they've actually lost outright the following week. It's a really good note from Connor and worth paying attention to here. You know, Vanderbilt's been a road dog of 20 or more points plenty of times. They've actually covered 3 of their last 4 there in that spot. I think if you're a Georgia fan, you like to see misery from Florida. I don't think they lose to the Commodores on Saturday, but the game being closer, I could certainly see that happening. Let me also talk about Tennessee-Kentucky for a minute, because I think this game is actually more interesting than you think. You know, a school like Kentucky probably has pretty good bowl implications on the line here. That's probably worth paying attention to, you know, at least a little bit. The thing I'll say is, you know, a Kentucky win probably propels Mark Stoops maybe a little bit more towards the Florida State job. So keep that in mind a little bit on Saturday. All the numbers sort of scream Tennessee here, but I just simply don't trust the Vols in this spot. I mentioned before, Florida kind of in a place they haven't been. This is the first time that Tennessee's been a road favorite in nearly 3 years. I think that's probably a little too much for them. I actually like Kentucky here in this game, and so keep that in mind as we kind of roll through SEC play on Saturday. Let me also mention kind of one more thing. This is not really an SEC story, but we'll do it as part of cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. There was a report by Ian Rappaport and is it Mike Garofalo from the NFL Network that Deion Sanders, who's also an NFL Network employee, let me read this from the rap sheet here. Deion Sanders has emerged as a candidate for the Florida State head coaching job, sources tell me and Mike Garofalo. A fascinating situation that could unfold. If there was ever a self-serving news report, this certainly comes across that way, hyping up a guy who happens to work for the NFL Network. Now, Deion is a coach now. He's doing some work. Is it Trinity High School in Texas that he's the coach for? Yeah, that's that's kind of one of those powerhouse private school programs in the state of Texas. So Deion is a coach now, but I don't believe he's the caliber of coach that Florida State ought to consider hiring. But I do love coaching rumors. I love this time of year. That is a lot of fun. There'll be a lot more of this to come in the days ahead. That's Cruise Run the SEC. It's brought to you by our friends at Royal Caribbean. And I want to talk in a moment more about Georgia and its series with Ohio State. I did this on video yesterday. I want to do this for our podcast and for our radio audience. Let me also remind you, I mentioned some point spreads and some picks a moment ago. You want to get your action down with MyBookie this week? It's a great time to sign up because you can get a big first deposit bonus. You can get a deposit doubled. You can get up to $1,000 added into your account, but you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. It's all one word, spelled D-A-W-G. Find MyBookie online. Type it into your browser. After that, you play, you win, you get paid. They got great player perks. They've got the fast, no hassle payout when you win. But to get the big deposit bonus, you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. All one word, D-A-W-G. Good luck this weekend with your picks there at MyBookie. So I saw a tweet from Kirk Herbstreit I wanted to show you, kind of throwing out some love to UGA for scheduling a non-conference series with Ohio State. And I think Herbie here kind of speaks to the way everybody feels about this. He says, good for these two programs and the ADs for setting this precedent. Can you imagine those two games? He means Georgia versus Ohio State in 2030 and 2031. Hope this trend keeps growing nationwide. Love it. And if it truly is a trend, I think here around Dog Nation, we're pretty confident that it's Georgia that started this trend because Ohio State's obviously not the only big series that's been scheduled. But think about this for a moment. Think about how Georgia's actions in college football stand in a sharp contrast to a lot of other things in professional sports. You know, in the NBA, we have load management now, right? We have star players not playing games. In baseball, it's okay to strike out. You shouldn't even try to steal bases. Football at the NFL level has become less physical. You know, quarterbacks take the snap, get rid of it quickly. It's almost become a version of flag football, given the way that the rules have been altered. You can look in almost every situation in sports now and see the evolution of sports towards whatever is easier. Hey, it's easy not to play, so therefore don't. It's easy not to worry about strikeouts, so therefore don't. It's easy not to worry about physical football at the line of scrimmage, so therefore don't. Sports seems to be evolving in most cases towards what's easier and simpler, and I guess in some cases just sort of watering it down. But Georgia seems to be evolving in the other direction. The evolution of college football, to the extent that it's happening, to the extent that Georgia's leading the way on that, is evolving towards, hey, let's not just play one non-conference game. Let's play two every year and then play an SEC schedule that might actually grow from 8 to 9 and then maybe keep Georgia Tech tacked on at the end of the year on top of that there as well. If this really is the evolution of college football, I think it's really interesting that college football, at least for now, seems to be the only sport that's evolving towards making things harder, more difficult, more complicated, more challenging, and the fact that Georgia's leading the way there in that regard, I think that's a pretty good thing. But obviously, that's many years into the future. Let's stick with the present here just for a moment, and let's look ahead to the weekend. You know, we kick off the weekend around here. We obviously think about Kroger. I told you about the big open house at various Kroger stores tomorrow. And, of course, kicking off the weekend also means the actions and the events there in Athens as well. So let's kind of set the broadcast day for you as Georgia gets ready to take on Missouri. We'll be on the air for our Kroger kickoff. That includes the dog walk right there from the Tate parking lot, approximately 4:30 for that. I'm guessing it's going to be a big crowd for the dog walk, and I'm guessing that's going to be a lot of fun. I expect the atmosphere on Saturday in Athens just to be huge. I think Georgia fans are ready to celebrate the win against Florida, ready to make things really tough on Missouri. I think you see that when it comes to the dog walk. Also, the game, 7 p.m., Missouri and Georgia. Weather, cold tomorrow. High in Athens of 55, low 35, so bundle up and be ready for the game. And then, of course, Pella Window post-game show immediately after the game from the UGA bookstore. We'll look forward to seeing you there for that. By the way, speaking of our friends at Kroger, don't forget Kroger Chef Jr. is on its way back right now in the month of November, a really cool creation, Fiesta Corn Salad. That's what you'll be making. I'm talking about when you sign up at a Kroger near you, you get a recipe card, an apron, a chef's hat, a recipe box, measuring spoons to add to your kitchen, all that available from our friends at Kroger. But you've got to go to this website, Kroger Chef Jr., to sign up and find a Kroger near you. That's KrogerChefJr.com. All right, so let's get ready for the weekend. Can't wait for that. Appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger here today. I like Georgia in this spot. You know, I think they're, what, about a 17-point favorite or so? I think that offensively, as we've talked about earlier in the show, leaning a lot on DeAndre Swift, leaning a lot on Lawrence Gager, defensively continuing to be stingy, kind of doing some of the things that Georgia has done really well. I think that's the recipe for this game. I think the following week at Auburn is, I think, a real challenge. I think Georgia knows it needs to make sure it's got its sort of business taken care of to be ready for that one next week. So look for Georgia, I believe, to come out and play a focused and sharp brand of football. It'll be fun to watch. Something else that's fun to think about, how about 1,105 days? That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. And you love the idea that Florida's got to live with that for the rest of this year, for many more years to come. Y'all enjoy Georgia, Missouri. We'll see you back here Monday. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.